coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. Isaiah Chavez is with us, started out in college radio, now is a broadcast IT engineer at Home Shopping Network. He's also got a great idea about recruiting new members into SBE. It's brilliant. Why aren't we all doing this? That's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb from the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, and glad to have you along. As always, it's our 617th episode of TWRT. Been doing this for, I think, about 13 years. I need to go take a count again, but I think we started this just before my son was born, so that would be about 13 years. Glad to have you along. And Chris Tarr couldn't make it in today. He is resting up from an amazing some round trips and a lot of transmitter installs, so we'll see if we can get Chris Tarr back here next week. But you're here, and that's what's important. Plus, our guest is here. Our guest is Isaiah Chavez. Let me get a two-shot going here. I'm going to run the buttons myself here today. Hey, Isaiah, good to see you.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing really well. It's good to see you. Isaiah, you and I met at an SBE meeting. We never met before that, did we?
No. It was over at the SBE meeting over at the radio station.
Yeah, in Tampa, right, at the Cox radio stations. Yeah, where Roz Clark is, and I guess some other engineers I should know.
Well, it was over at, at Beasley.
Oh, it was at Beasley. That's right. Yeah. And Roz was there because it was an SBE meeting. Yes. Most of the local engineers were there. That's right. It was at Beasley Broadcasting. That's right. Okay, so before you came in the room, and I'm building this up for our audience, you people watching, listening. Before you came in the room, I was told, hey, watch out for this guy, Isaiah Chavez, because he's going to be bringing some new blood into the SBE meeting. And I said, new blood? Really? Yeah, he's really good at it. He brings new people in, and some of them actually stay around. So I thought, well, I got to talk to this Isaiah guy and see how this goes. And sure enough, the door opens, you walk in all proud, kind of like a mama duck, you know, with your ducklings behind you.
Yep, I had all the new people behind me.
So, I'll shut up. You tell me about that day and how you got all these new people to come and these engineers.
Well, what I did was that, you know, I talked to everyone. I'm very social, just like you, Kirk. And over at where I work, there was a lot of young people that want to understand a little bit more about broadcast engineering. So I was like, hey, guess what? You come over to our meetings. We've got a new program for you. I'm not going to tell you what until later in the later on the show.
Okay.
But I'm like, you come in. It's going to be tons of fun. You get to see a lot of cool stuff. You get to see a cool educational packet, and you get to meet Kirk. And they're like, I'm hooked. And I'm completely understandable.
Oh, my gosh.
So I got quite a few people to come. And when they came, they all just kind of huddled up together. I'm like, what are you doing? Go explore. you don't be stuck on the wall. So, you know, I began to chit chat with them. They warmed up. And when I came through the doors, I came with all the new people.
And that meeting where the people that came in with you, that wasn't a one-off. I mean, you bring new people in. I don't know if, you know, every single meeting, but, you know, year round, you're finding a few people to bring in. And I can tell the Tampa SBE chapter is kind of abuzz with some new life.
Yes. Over at SBE chapter 39, we've got a lot of new people. And I also go to different colleges and I talk to them about how much fun it is to do broadcast engineering. And I tell them, hey, come over to the SBE meeting. I could show you the true life of a broadcast engineer. And they get all excited about it and whatnot, and I get them in.
Hey, I say we're going to take our first quick break because at the top of every show, we talk a little bit about Nautel and what they do for the industry. And they do some good things, too, different than what you're doing, but they do some good stuff. Here's the website, nautel.com/webinars. Now, you know, they do this transmission talk Tuesday, and these are discussions. They're not really webinars. It's on the webinar page, but these are roundtable discussions. But something that I'm going to talk about for just a minute is the SBE recertification credit. If you go to nautel.com/webinars and then click on recertification credit, you get this little reminder that every Nautel webinar qualifies you for 1/2 credit of SBE recertification credit. And you click on start watching, and this is the page that you want to go to because, by the way, through the month of October, they didn't do any Transmission Talk Tuesdays. They will pick those back up in November, not this first Tuesday in November, but a little bit later on. We'll keep you apprised of that. But here's where you can get a list of every archived Transmission Talk Tuesday discussion, every episode, repair or replace, how to decide, site improvement on a budget. Hey, this is good. AC power, how to talk to your electrician. And I've seen some real serious mistakes made just because, you know, the engineer kind of knew what he wanted. The electrician was wrong about what he thought he was being told about what was wanted. And, you know, the wrong kind of power got put in. The 10,000-foot view, working with your tower crew. There's a webinar. There's a seminar here, webinar about the VX series, the new series of FM transmitters from Nautel. So there's a product launch where there's a lot of good information about that. People are buzzing about that new transmitter line. What does that do when stuff goes sideways? You can see, transmitter site networking, moving your data over IP links, and an introduction to networking for non-IP types. You can see there's a whole lot going on here, and it's all good stuff. So nautel.com/webinars is the website to go to. You want to check that out. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And you, our faithful listeners and viewers, you can show your support by going to nautel.com/webinars. And do check out the Transmission Talk Tuesdays as soon as they're back available for sign-up, which I think will be next week, but we'll let you know. You need to do that because that's a good time. You get to participate. If you want to ask a question or even tell a story or add to the technical information, your knowledge is valuable to add to the discussion on Transmission Talk Tuesdays. Well, it is the 617th episode of This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack here in the Nashville studios, the Telos Alliance studios in Nashville, Tennessee. I want to thank Telos Alliance for giving me an hour or so off on Thursdays to do this show. It's really helpful, and I hope I'm doing the industry at least a little bit of a favor. Our guest is Isaiah Chavez. And Isaiah, in the Tampa area, you've been through a pretty interesting career. Things got started for you early on, and I'd love to, I've heard this story once, and there's pieces I'm forgetting, so, and our audience hasn't heard it. So we all have stories about how we got started in radio. I won't tell the story, but I got started because I stuttered. I couldn't say my name. I really actually couldn't, let alone a set of call letters. I couldn't say my name. And so, of course, I wanted to do radio because, you know, sometimes we want to do what we can't do. So I overcame that, got on the air, and it somehow I made a career for a while out of doing that. You, sir, had another interesting story about how you started in radio. So regale us with that if you don't mind.
I think everybody has a different story of how they started their career. Mine is almost like yours, Kirk. I've got a speech impediment, so I don't sound good right now. I just got over bronchitis. But what happened was that it was college, and one of my friends decided to be funny and signed me up for their college radio. And unbeknownst to me, and then I get a call. I'm like, hello? They're like, hey, Isaiah, you signed up. You're going to be doing 4 hours of radio every Wednesday. Good luck. Bye. Click.
Wait a minute. You got signed up to be on the radio as a prank? Somebody pranked you?
Yep. One of my friends wrote my name in. Oh, God. And I had no idea until I got it. I got the phone call and the email of, hey, you're doing the radio station now. Good luck.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh. So, go ahead.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? 4 hours of radio? That's a lot of radio. Like, what do I do? What do I say? All these things going in my mind. I was like, okay, you know what? I'll just talk about news. I don't know. So what happened was that you had to call the land manager, property manager. There we go. I had to talk to the property manager for him to give me permission to get inside of the studio. Well, a lot of the times I'll call, nothing. Call again, nothing. I was like, okay, what's going on with me? So very few times I actually was allowed to do my radio show. But I remember once I come in, I'm looking around and I'm like, that's a beer bottle. That's a bong. Ew, that's a used condom wrapper. What?
Ooh.
And I sit down at the DJ, just sit down in the chair, and I'm like, hey, what? I was like, oh no, it's sticky. Oh no.
Oh my God.
Oh. So you know what? I was like, okay, never again. I'm done with this. So at the end of the semester, I was like, nope, done. Here you go. Good riddance. And then I get a phone call from another station going, hey, we heard your radio show and we really like it. Can we do it over? Can you do the same thing at our station? I'm like, okay, someone actually listens and wants my jibber jabber on your station? Okay, let's just do this. So I did so, and I changed it up a little bit. I made it into like the campus live show and whatnot. And it got so big, it was on the marquee sign. So I was like, wow, you know, oh, I was at like the height. You know, people want to listen to me. People saw me. You know, I was living the Kirk Harnack life back when he was in high school. You know, everybody was just surrounding him. So I was just like, this is amazing.
I just had this thought about that chair that won't leave my mind. There's a list of things not to trust. Gas station sushi. Okay.
Yep.
Control room chair at a college radio station.
Yeah. Who would have thought? You know.
That could even be a Jeopardy question. You know, or a Jeopardy answer. You know, and the question is, what is a radio station control room chair at a college? things that are sticky, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Be a good CSI episode. Let me tell you.
Oh my gosh! They bring the people fluorescent light. Like, yeah. I don't even want to imagine. Okay, so you left that station, but another station calls you right away, and so we, hey,
yeah, would right you away. So okay. I was over at that station for 3 years.
Yeah,
and it was a lot of fun. You know, I had a lot of guests. I never knew that people would actually enjoy me just talking about the campus lifestyle and groups and the events and whatnot, and being on the marquee sign, people running to meet me. It was so bizarre because, you know, I was a geek in high school. No one wanted to touch a geek or be around a geek. And then college happens and it's the opposite. So anyways, it was a lot of fun. But you know what? After the radio show was done, after college, someone pushed that red button. I was done.
Because you're in college, so you can work at the college radio station.
Yes.
But when you graduate, what happens?
You're done. That's it.
Oh.
You know, you gotta hang up the microphone and walk away. Your time's done.
And you have to go out and look for a, I'm not going to say a real job, because college radio can be a real job, but you got to go out and find something that's not college radio.
Yep. So I went back down to my hometown. And I was looking around. I was like, okay, I've got to find something. And I was like, ooh, community radio. So I contacted the community radio station. And they were like, hey, we'd love to have you. You begin Friday. So I was with them for around a year and a half. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I did a lot. And I did a lot of mistakes, too. But, I mean, you know, when you're 21, you can make mistakes. Now, everybody makes mistakes.
Help me understand. I actually, two or three times in my radio career, I have done volunteer engineering for a community radio station. I never even thought about charging them money, even though they do still have a couple of paid staffers. It just doesn't, I enjoy helping them out. I like to see them, you know, at least be on the air and at least sound good, even if they don't have the best of equipment. Talk to me, if you would, like, this is ancient history now, or at least past history. Tell me, if you would, about the what's the financial, you know, community radio, how does that even get funded very well? I guess you got paid for working there, yeah?
No.
Oh, you didn't? Oh.
No. Over at the community radio, everyone's pretty much all volunteers.
Ah, okay.
We get paid through, you know, those telethons and whatnot and grants and whatever we can get from government to help fund the radio station. Now, I really enjoyed my time there, but I didn't get paid a dime, and that's just fine because just like you, Kirk, you know, it's fun helping out a community station and making them grow. So I enjoyed that. And then one of my bosses at a TV station that I worked at, he was like, hey, I hear that you can do this, you can do that, and they're looking for new board ops for a station over at CMG. And I was like, okay, let me hang up my hat over at the community radio station. And 2 months later, I got into my job over at Cox Radio. And there it is. I've been there for 10 years now. So,
congratulations.
You know, it's pretty awesome being in radio for as long as I have because, you know, I've seen a lot of people lose hope. A lot of people flip different careers. But if you love what you do, keep on doing it. Just like you, Kirk. You're still on the radio, and you've been doing it for maybe a century or two. So I've been only doing it for almost two decades.
Can you say the call letters of the station that you're board hopping at?
Yeah, WHPT.
HPT. Okay. Now, okay, help me understand. So I'm a small, medium market engineer. We haven't had board ops in years, except for maybe if we got to run something that just can't run itself. Even our college football games these days are fully automated. And once in a while, something goes wrong. But for the most part, you know, they run themselves. In your case, were you board opping live shows or network shows or what?
Oh, everything. Just to be there for the cluster, which is all the stations and whatnot, the live shows. I was actually on the Johnny B show for 4 years, so I was the phone screener for them.
Okay,
and the producer for the show as well.
So that was a local live show, and you.
Yes.
I mean, it needed a body there to do these things. I mean, yes. It needed somebody in radio, not just a warm body, but somebody that actually knew what they were doing.
Yes.
Okay.
So I was doing all the phone screening, all the producing, all the social media management and whatnot. So I was like that hub for that show that I did for 4 years.
And see, you understand, we each have our own perspective into, you know, how radio works in different markets and different size markets. In all of my experience, you know, I some of my own radio stations, for example, we were affiliates of you know, pretty standard talk radio, whether it was Rush Limbaugh or whoever it was. And we always had automation systems that would run those shows automatically. And we had a guy who is responsible for automation who cares, and he could really make it sing and dance and walk and talk. But in my Telos job, I would go to big market radio stations, and I'd see a big market news talk station with a live board op for Rush Limbaugh. And I'm going like, huh? Why do you need a warm body to play spots on Rush Limbaugh? Now, I know I'm using Rush as an example, but everybody knows him or knew him. I know there are some network shows that don't run as easily, and I'm sure that some of these big city stations had more complicated breaks with you know, a little more happening in them than we did. But it strikes me as a little funny. Why do you need a board op to run a network show that should run itself? But in big cities, you also have live local shows, which do
yes.
require a producer, board ops, call screener, all that stuff. And maybe yeah. even a voice of reason, a sounding board, live interaction with the, you know, with the main host.
Yes, and that's what we have, actually.
Ah, okay.
102.5, which is WHPT. We have mainly all local shows, local and live. So we do need people. So, and I'm glad that I'm a part of it. And, you know, yes, there are automation, which we all know that. But, no, for the live shows, it's live and we need the people.
I got one more question before we got to take our break. Thinking about being a board op, because you've been doing that a long time, and actually you're awfully humble saying board op, because you really do. If these are live shows, you're doing a lot there.
Oh, we do it all.
What do you think? If someone wants to be in radio and they don't necessarily want to be on the air, they don't want to be the talent on the air, but they want to make the whole thing happen behind the scenes. They feel that that's where their strengths are. So although you're interesting on the air, what skills does a person need to develop to be a board op and help produce a show and make it flow, especially with call-in callers?
To be a good board op, you do need a background in some type of radio. For me, my background is I've got a bachelor's in radio and TV productions, and specifically in audio. So when I was in college, I did a lot of audio operations and whatnot, you know, to dip my toes into what I was getting myself into in radio. But yes, you do need some type of learnings of it. But once you get into radio, I think my biggest thing that people need to understand is listening skills. You got to listen. You got to be that machine that, you know, you hear the tick, 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 tick. You got to back time, you got to back time something. Mm. You know, you got to know how much the break is so that they know when to get in, when to get out. You know, you kind of have to be automatic yourself to make sure that the show runs smoothly. You know, you need to ask the host, hey, would you like this music? Would you like that music? Would you like a double break this hour? Would you not? So always try to come up with something that's beneficial for the show, and always know how to make it better.
I'll bet there are some hosts that really depend on you to start playing the bumper music, indicating, dude, you need to wrap it up now because we have a hard break we're up against, and that's why I'm playing the bumper music under you.
Yes.
You know, and some hosts even say on the air, well, that music means it's time for us to take a break.
Yep. That bumper music is like amazing. So what I do is I'll text them, hey, got 45 seconds left, bumper music in 15, you know, so they know so that I'll be playing with the music and whatnot, making sure that they know what's going on, what's going off. I run a very, very tight board. Some people say I'm too mean to the board because I'm like to the T, like this is what you get. That's it. You know, like after that, you know, I've got to go to the next show because what I do is during the weekends, we do a lot of brokerage shows, and it's almost every couple of hours I'm doing a different show. Different show. Mm. You need to know how they work and operate. You need to know how to like fly in their shows, because a lot of the times they like you to be on the show too, to just add extra flair to it, you know, and it's a lot of fun. It really is.
We're talking to Isaiah Chavez. Isaiah has a career in radio, also in television, in broadcast and broadcast IT. We're going to get to that. And we're going to get to Isaiah's secret about how to bring new members into your SPE chapter. So that is coming up. Also, hey, Isaiah, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you specifically about some of your tips about screening phone callers who are going to go on the air. I want to ask you about that since I bet you're really good at that. Yes. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 617. Isaiah Chavez from Tampa, Florida is our guest. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcast Bionics over in the UK. But you know what? They're around the world helping radio stations to create amazing content and sharing it on social media easily and quickly. Here's some more words from Broadcast Bionic.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI. And incoming connections are visible to users, along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
And you can learn more at bionic.radio or bionics.co.uk. I know there's a couple different addresses there. There's also a link in our show notes here at This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks a lot to Broadcast Bionics for your incredible work that you're doing to help radio to be more interactive with audiences and for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. By the way, we're going to have Dan McQuillan, the founder of Broadcast Bionics, on an upcoming show, and he's got some amazing stuff to show. I'm really excited to have Dan back on. He always fails to disappoint. He is that the right word? He never disappoints. I don't know. Let me bring the expert in, the guy who keeps the talk show hosts. He doesn't disappoint.
Okay. Yes, that's, you're correct. That's what I'm trying to say.
We'll let you know when Dan's going to be back. Okay, we're with Isaiah Chavez from Tampa, Florida. Isaiah, radio, TV, and TV engineering also, and SBE. So all those topics are coming along. All right. Phone screening. I've never gotten to ask. I've never had an expert before on phone screening, even though I work for a company that makes phone systems and people use us for screening all the time. So what is critical for you when you're checking out these callers thinking, you know, this one's just not going to work, or, oh, this is a good call. This is a good call. Tell me about that process.
Well, a lot of the hosts that I work with, they like all the calls. But what I do is that if it's like a really weird call, I'll do like a couple of question points, or I'll type in there, eh, you might not want this, you know, but if you want, you can take it. But what I usually do is I pick up, I'm like, hello, this is WHBT, what's the question? And they're like, oh, my question is blank. So I just type out like a couple of words about the question. And I'm like, what's your name? And I put the name, it's like, okay, and make sure, you know, you do not cuss on air, and you're good to go. So I put them on hold and then would take whenever you need it. A lot of the shows, we have full lines. So I'm constantly just type, you know, because WHBT is very popular. So that's what I love about the station, is that they always keep me on my toes. But yeah. That's what we do for phone screening. And I love it, you know, but I do a lot more than just phone screening. So from phone screening, producing, hosting, you know, pretty much anything that they'll throw at me, I'll do it.
Yeah. You know, I at some shows, phone screening is kind of a full-time job. At other shows, I mean, you said you're busy, you know, you're multitasking. You may even be called to, you know, come on the air and make some comment, but you're also keeping the host informed and alert and on time, because they need to be kept on time. So if you would, Isaiah, talk to us about your transition into the world of television and how you kind of worked yourself into television operations. And eventually we'll get to where you are now in the broadcast IT, which is, it's really where I want you to take us. But walk us through the radio to television entree into TV there.
All right, well, it's pretty much parallel. I did pretty much radio. I began radio just as long as I've began with television. Ah. Even in college, I did television and whatnot myself. So what got me into television is that, you know, you see moving objects on a screen, and I'm like, wow, that's so cool. And as a kid, we were always watching news. So I was always intrigued about the graphics and the audio and how do they do it and the green screen. So I've always been interested in that. That's hence why I got into television. Anyways, so after college, I did a job over at an auction TV channel, and I did that for quite a number of years. I began as just a regular video production guy, which pretty much does it all, the cameras, the audio, the graphics, the switching, so on and so forth. And then they needed me over at the post-production. So I began doing both. You know, I'll age myself a little bit. I was doing Final Cut X. Oh, there I go. So it wasn't Adobe at the time, you know.
Yeah.
Final Cut was the Final Cut for everyone.
Uh-huh.
So I did that, and I did a little bit of both. And then I had an opportunity at an Amazon TV station, which I graciously took. And I did the same thing. I began in cameras. Well, no, I began audio, and then did audio for a while, and then cameras, and then all the other different positions. And I was like, you know what? I want something more for myself. That's when I began to join the SBE. And I took a couple of certifications, and that's where my liking of broadcast engineering took place. And I got lucky over at the TV station because a few broadcast engineering positions was open. And I went up to the boss and I was like, hey, I've got these certifications. I've got the experience. Can I please have a chance? And luckily they gave me that chance. And I really enjoyed it because it taught me so much. It taught me how to make cables, splicing, soldering, learning about electronics, ripping out everything and then putting it all back together again, making sure that it works. You know, it was so much fun getting to tinker with all these electronics. And I did that for a little bit. And they were talking about needing a new, not a new, but they wanted more people to know about IT, specifically networking. So I was like, okay, cool. Let me see what I could do. So at the job that I was at, it offered free education. Now, I advise anyone, any age, you know, they give you an opportunity to learn for free. Do it. I mean, what are you losing? Nothing. So I got my associates in networking, and I had to do an internship, and I did it with my job at the time. So that was really cool.
That's good enough. All right. So you're telling me about making this transition to IT because they wanted you to. And let me go back to something that you said. And that was about continuing education that your employer, what, sponsors or helps pay for the tuition?
Yes, yes. They, you know, a lot of different companies give you free education now these days. And use it because, you know, you got to keep moving up. You got to keep moving on. You know, don't stay stagnant. Always strive for more. And that is what I'm all about. So they gave me an opportunity to get my education, which I did. And when I did my internship, I did it over at the same station that I was at. And they were like, hey, you're really good. We can use you as broadcast IT. So sure, why not? Let's do it.
I want to get back in a minute into that education thing and what you studied and what where you're going now with that. But you're the second person in a couple of months that has talked really seriously about using your current job and whatever benefits you can get from that. I attended a kind of a business breakfast a couple of months ago, and the speaker was a fellow. Well, he had written a book and he was on a book tour, but he was the former marketing director or VP marketing for Chick-fil-A. And so, you know, they're a very successful chain of restaurants. he had written a book about advancing your career, you know, while you're doing something, advance your career, basically. What's your next move? And he pointed out that, look, if you can get education, get a degree, bachelor's, associate's, bachelor's, master's, whatever, if you can do that and have your current employer defray the tuition costs and maybe even give you a little bit of time to do that, by all means, do it. Use your existing job to help you spring forward. Of course, your employer is hoping that you'll be better for them, and maybe you will stay for a long time and be better for them. But really, you want to advance, you know, your own skills. So is that how you felt about it when you found out your employer would help defray that cost?
Oh, yeah. I took it immediately because I knew I could help them better if I understood more topics. So by going through the free education, it really helped me a lot. I'm still doing it. Currently, I'm getting my bachelor's in IT and my master's in IT. So I'm double dipping right now. But hey, for free, it's for me. So, and also, you got to enjoy what you do. If you don't enjoy it, don't even do it.
All right. Now, I'm curious. What kind of class load do you do? How do you find time to go to school when you're working full time?
Juggling, you know, just like you, Kirk. You do everything all at once. Also,
I'll point this. You know, a lot of folks, and you know, sometimes me included. Hey, I'm too busy to do that. I'm too busy. There was a time in my life I spent 3 years going to broadcast meteorology school at Mississippi State University remotely. Most of it was at home. Some of it I did have to go to Birmingham, but Alabama. But I had a full-time job at Telos while I was getting a certificate in meteorology. So, you know, and sure, I'd bring my textbooks with me to company meetings. And when we took a break, I'd, you know, read that next chapter on hydrology. So, yeah, if you want to do that, you can do it. So what areas of IT have you been focusing on?
Security, because security is such a big subject in any company, anywhere. They need security and they need it now. Because not many people are skilled in that subset because there's so many things in IT. Networking, there's UX, there's ADing, you know, there's virtualization, which we could talk about that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, what about security? Oh, well, oops, we kind of need that too. So that's what I'm studying for my bachelor's. And in my master's, I'm studying IT, but I'm focusing on user studies to see how we can help out more people understand computers or, you know, not get into those security hijinks, you know, like phishing and whatnot, you know, since that's an ugly phase that we're going through right now. You know, any magazine I read, any security magazine I read, they talk about phishing and it's a very icky thing. Social engineering is no good. So we try to help people understand what social engineering is and what to do and those type of scenarios.
You know, of course, I get, you know, phishing or scam emails from time to time, and a lot of them get filtered out. Some of them don't. And my constant thought is if these scammers ever learn how to spell in English, we're all in trouble. Because there's usually some telltales, right?
Email, you know, doesn't make any sense. Wrong name, wrong company. There are so many things that you can tell what is social engineering and just to delete it.
If the Nigerian prince ever finds the lowercase letters on the keyboard, we're in trouble because then it'll look so much more real at that point.
Oh, just a little bit.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, we're talking to Isaiah Chavez. Isaiah, your career path is, you know, not unlike a lot of people going through radio, you're in television, and now into IT. And when we come back from this break, I want to ask you more about IT and virtualization, whether it's in radio or television, your thoughts on that, where you think we're going forward with that. And I haven't forgotten about your secret formula for getting SBE members. to join up with SBE. So we're with Isaiah Chavez right now. And our show, This Week in Radio Tech, episode 617, were brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store. And BGS is a place where you can really latch on to some cool equipment. And they got sharp pencils there at BGS. One of the manufacturers that BGS represents is, of course, Broadcast Tools. These guys, this is Don Wingett's company, and he designs this amazing gear that really helps us engineers out in so many ways. This is one of Broadcast Tools' cool products called the Audio Sentinel 4. This is the AES version. They also have an analog input version as well. I happened to click on the AES version here. Let's see if I can scroll through this just a bit. You can see this AES version has four AES inputs. It also has triggered outputs, GPIOs, outputs there. This box can be configured and monitored locally and or remotely over any IP network, including private networks, IP-based industrial control networks, and of course public internet. So you can log in from outside, and if with the right password and credentials, and see this thing. This can give you silence trip level detection. It has four stereo silence phase and AES error sensors with front panel activity, sample rate, and alarm LED indicators. It has support for SSL, TLS, secure SMTP authentication, so you can have this thing email out to your favorite email service, and it does all the right encryption so that it works with today's email services. It does have the Neutrik brand XLR input jacks. It has eight open collector alarm outputs on removable Euroblock style screw terminal connectors. So if you want to hook it to something, locally, you can certainly do that. And again, they have an analog version of this too. The analog version is interesting in that it can do eight mono inputs as well as four, or instead of four stereo inputs. So you can monitor, use left and right to give you two different monitoring inputs. But Broadcast Tools solves so many problems for you, and that's why they say right there on their website, Broadcast Tools, problem solved. And they're making more and more devices that are web accessible and have the facilities to send you an email when something changes, goes wrong, when there's a status change that you need to be aware of. I love their gear. Been using Broadcast Tools gear myself. Oh my goodness, I guess since the mid-1990s, the products they made that switched to satellite receiver channels, they just make so many things. In fact, you go to their website at broadcasttools.com and you click on this products thing and look at all the different things that they make: time bases, accessories, distribution amplifiers, analog DAs, digital DAs, look at that, AES EBU distribution amplifier, the AES switcher sentinel, all kinds of sentinels to watch things automatically for you, the Mix 4 product, the NTP server sentinel. Oh my goodness, just so many, many things here at Broadcast Tools. And when it's time for you to buy one of these things and actually order it, well, here's where you go: Broadcasters General Store. You go there because, well, they're really friendly. They sponsor this show. That should be a good reason right there. And, Broadcasters General Store likes to operate on the phones. You can call them up, talk to a friendly, knowledgeable person, unless you get Buck Waters. Well, then, he's friendly, but sorry, Buck. Call them at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700. Their website is bgs.cc, and they carry so many of the things that you need, from Comrex, Audio Press Box, Axia, Angry Audio. They have cabling. Do you know that? Easy to get cables there. Lots of custom cables available too. Hey, if you need RF line, just give them a call, and they'll even have the connectors put on for you if that's what you want, or put on one end. And of course, they have things from Broadcast Bionics as well. Angry Audio, as I mentioned. So many different things at Broadcasters General Store. I love them, and I really think that you will love them too. So check them out. Thanks a lot, Broadcaster General Store, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right. Isaiah Chavez is with us. We were just moving from from IT education and how you should take advantage of that, because that's where everything's going. And I want to ask you about that, Isaiah. I've been prognosticating for years, hey, learn about IT. It's inevitable. We're going to be putting broadcast systems. They won't be in, you know, a box that screws in the rack that does one thing anymore. We're moving away from that world. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just that now we've got systems where we can fit a whole lot of stuff into one box and duplicate it and have it fail-safed and have it fail-safed in the cloud or in a data center. There's so many things we can do in the IT world that are really difficult and expensive to do in the non-IT world. So, Isaiah, would you talk about that for a minute, about broadcast systems moving into IT systems?
Well, I go to many, many different type of conventions, and they usually tell, hey, you know, this is what this company does and what that company does, and they show examples of what they do. And it flabbergasts me to see how one station had five rows of racks and now it's down to one, you know. Or in another example, you know, they used to have three racks and now they're just down to one rack, you know, just to see how things move so fast with technology these days. I remember back in the day where two or three systems are needed just to move something out or something in. Now you can hook everything up with one server, and that's all you need. And it's nothing special. Just one regular server can do everything for you now.
You know, that's an interesting point. I know that, you know, in the radio industry, well, of course, if you've been around since the late 80s, early 90s, you know that, hey, we got rid of cart machines and CD players and we put everything onto computers. And we all had a learning curve there. And hey, we had to wait for operating systems to get better and more reliable. We don't have the blue screens of death that we used to have, at least not much. We have Linux operating systems that run servers, very reliable to sit there and run and run and run with rarely a problem. And so I guess my point is that, you know, if you've had problems with virtualized or computerized systems in the past, and now we're going to be moving into containerized software systems. If you've had problems with that in the past, don't imagine that those problems still exist or that they haven't been dealt with, because, you know, Amazon and your bank and every store that's online, you know, they depend on that income. They depend on their back-end systems working. If you've got a store online, guess what? It is not running on a purpose-built piece of equipment in a rack in the back of the store. No, it's running in a data center somewhere.
Yep.
That's how online shopping works. Now, yes, eventually the order gets to their warehouse and somebody goes pluck something off the shelf and puts it in a UPS box. I get that. Just like we take our finished product and send it to the transmitter site, where we haven't virtualized transmitters yet because there, so far, there isn't a 50,000 watt Dell server. So we still do that, and antennas, you know, there. So,
yep.
But all the everything between the microphone and the transmitter input, including the audio processing, eventually EAS, phone systems, codecs, of course, you know, on-air playout systems, mixing consoles, all of that getting virtualized, whether it's local. Excuse me for pontificating here, but I'm going to ask you to comment on all the stuff I'm spewing out here. You know, whether you virtualize locally on premises in this, you know, in this radio station, or whether you've offloaded some of that into data center or even a cloud center, and all this has been shown to work, and some broadcasters are doing this right now. This is where it's going inevitably. And that's why people like you, people like me, people like the new engineers you're bringing in, they need to learn about this stuff. I'll be quiet now and let you tell us more about why we've got to learn IT for broadcast.
Yes, as we all know, like even different studios and whatnot, or even the conventions. The conventions are always saying SMPTE 2110, SMPTE 2110. You know, that's going to be the thing, which it is. You know, which is all IP based. So you're going to need to know how to network. What's an IP address? What's a subnet? What's a gateway? You know, what is the DNS? You know, there is so many things that people need to understand to make note of when a studio goes 2110. So what I did is, you know, I used the networking degree that I got with AS, my bachelor's also with the security. It taught me a lot about IP addresses. It taught me all about firewalls and how to harden different OSs. And the master's that I'm doing right now is teaching me a lot about coding. So put all of those skills together, you know, that's going to make you one heck of an engineer that any company would want. And, you know, people cannot just stay still and say, ah, I don't need that. Well, guess what, buddy? Technology changes. You're going to be out of the loop. Maybe your job might go poof. You know, and I've heard about it, that, you know, that's been happening. And you just have to keep learning. Being in broadcast is a forever evolving job.
Yeah.
It never, I mean, it always changes. So
you bring up a good point, and it reminds us, you know, of sometimes these broadcasting companies, whether they're large, sometimes smaller ones, let people go. We've heard of, you know, when they've did some real bloodletting at some of the larger broadcasters. If you get let go from a broadcaster and you've been an engineer, but, you know, in the background, you've been working on your IT skills, you can be valuable, well, certainly to another broadcaster, but you can also be valuable anywhere. It may not be broadcasting. Let's say for a year, let's say you love broadcasting, but you've sharpened your IT skills. You can go work for a different industry while you go back, while you're looking to get back into broadcasting, if that's what you love, as so many of us do. So IT is applicable everywhere.
Yes, your skills can be applied anywhere. That's why I did that, because with my first degree in radio and TV, that's a very, very tiny niche, is TV production.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's why I was like, ooh, you know what, let me work on this, and luckily I can. And that's why I grew to, you know, my associates, my bachelor's, now my master's in IT, learning all these vital skills I need to know that I could put anywhere. And it's really nice. But I love what I do, and I want to change it for the world.
I just keep thinking, Isaiah, about how technology changes. And, you know, usually technology changes for a big reason, and that is to reduce cost. Mm-hmm. And sometimes as employees who love broadcast, we kind of hate to admit it. When I started in television weather, we still had paper running over a platter with a camera pointed at the paper for the teleprompter.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was not. Now, it was very shortly thereafter computerized. And then I've worked at TV stations where we had a prompter operator who would watch the prompter text and see what the anchor or the news, or the weather, the sports guy was reading, and would run it for you. But even at a big station here in Nashville that I've done weather for, they switched to no prompter operator. That is, they're the foot switches now for the anchors. Now I know that the people who write software to run these teleprompter scriptings, that they really have honed it very well to where this usually works really well. And so it's not that big a detriment to not have a prompter operator, but think of the money that the TV station saves by not having a prompter operator. Same thing with, you know, you, me, other engineers not having to maintain some of the gear we have because now we have servers. Anyway, a lot of this forward motion, there's fits and starts as we go along, but we're also borrowing from the huge IT industry, and it, you know, your bank can't get this wrong. It needs to be right, right?
Yes.
And we get to borrow the technology that other industries have grown up and proven and made nearly bulletproof.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
But talking about the operator for what is it? Oh, the prompter. Back in college, we actually had a prompter operator. So I was actually one of them.
Yeah.
But you just don't do that these days. Or back at, you know, a decade ago, we used to have tape VTRs. We don't have tape VTRs anymore.
Yeah, I know. You know, I've threaded my share of 2-inch helical scan. Yeah. Or, quadruplex of VTRs.
What I miss about that is the people, because it was a team and we made it a fun team. So like after you do like a broadcast, a news broadcast, mm-hmm. we all go out for dinner.
Oh, sure.
We all go out bowling and whatnot, have a good time. That is, you know, and now the stations that I've seen, especially up in Georgia, just one person. That's your team. And it boggles my mind because like, I like that team. You know, where it's multiple people, and it's just, I understand. It's just the way that technology changes. But you know what? When I talk to students, I always bring it, you know, oh, back in the day, you know, type thing. And, you know, just a lot of good memories.
Well, it is not fun to wax poetic, but we all know that technology moves forward, but it does open up other jobs. Hey, I don't know how people think about this. Do people who work at Amazon Web Services, huge data centers, do they romanticize what they do? They may very well. I don't know. Broadcasting's always been fun, right? We get to meet some celebrities. I've worked at rock stations where we had, you know, all the rock groups come in. I've driven rock groups around in my van because we sponsored the show. You know, and I don't know how they trusted getting in my van and going somewhere, but they did. Oh my goodness. For our own survival as engineers, we've got to learn about
progress.
We got to progress. If you're standing still, you are falling behind.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So much to talk about. We are getting to the SBE secret, the secret formula for bringing people in. Let's see. Was there anything else we wanted to really hit on here?
Maybe we could talk about like how do students get into broadcast, or how do students get into broadcast engineering?
Yeah. Tell us what you know about that.
Well, a lot of schools, they don't do that anymore. You know, you're either broadcasting for, you know, journalism, you broadcast radio or broadcast televisions. There's no broadcast engineering. It's kind of weird that is left out of a lot of colleges, you know, or there's IT. So getting into that niche is what I tell the students is always try to study broadcasting as well as electrical engineering by combining both of those degrees. So you can make an interdisciplinary study, which you could take a little bit of this, a little bit of that. By placing broadcasting and electronic engineering together, that's like a delicious peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Well, if you like PBJ sandwich, I don't know. I like it. So, but by doing that, that really puts you up the flagpole, because that's what BE is all about. It's about learning electronics, learning broadcast, how they are married to each other, and it's a perfect way to begin.
Gotcha. Wow. Yeah. Wow, there's so many places that we could go. I really appreciate you sharing your own experiences here. For your own career, let me ask you a straight out question here. Are you happy with where you've been able to progress by following your interests and being passionate about those curiosities?
Oh, yes. I love Rideman in both ways, radio and television. Because with radio, you know, this speaks a lot right here, you know, being there for as long as I have, but I enjoy it every day. It's a little different. It's fun. I like my bosses. It's like a family too, because like if I need to call traffic, I'm like, hey, traffic, blah, 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 you know, and we always have a good time, you know, just like in television. I thought I was going to be just a camera guy for the rest of my life. But I realized that I wanted something more, because I'm like, yes, I got my goals. Well, I did it when I was 21. What am I going to do when I'm 30 or 40 or 50? Yeah. So I was like, okay, you know what? Let's make some goals. So my goals was to keep traveling up and seeing where I led, and broadcast IT, here I am.
It is interesting how the things that we thought we wanted to do when we were younger, we accomplished those things, and we realized, okay, that actually wasn't that hard, or I'm proud of where I am, or whatever. I think I got to do more if I want to continue in this business. And that, I guess that happens a lot with a lot of different businesses. If you want to be a cameraman all your life in a studio, guess what? Most of those jobs are gone. At least all the TV stations I've worked at in news, they've replaced three cameras and three camera people. Then it was two camera people, and then it was six cameras and no camera people.
Yep.
And all robotic cameras.
I've seen that in many news stations also.
Yeah.
And what I've seen in colleges is that they still teach them the way that it was prior. And I'm like, no, it's not the way it is now.
Yeah. You know,
they're going to be disappointed when they get out there going, I got my resume. Oh, wait, I guess I just can't use it with anyone anymore. You know, and it calls me a little deep inside because I've seen that, you know, all the hope, you know, that they've been received, and then they're really passionate about playing with cameras or playing with audio, and then they never get that chance. It kills me because even with me, it took me 450 applications before I actually found a job myself.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Wow. And these days in newsrooms, it seems like all of the switching to sound on tape or to packages or camera switching, all that is now programmed into the rundown. What's the popular name of the news systems that they have?
I forgot, Newscaster. Or something like that.
Yeah, and you program them all in, and now instead of a control room full of people, you know, there's a TD, a technical director, and he's hitting next as they go through the rundown that switches cameras. Cameras repoint to, you know, this screen or that screen.
Yep. No stage managers.
Yeah,
no
chip ops, yeah.
Just nothing, you know.
Well, for those engineers, though, those of us, SBE members and TV engineers, if we can learn how to make those systems run and keep them running, recognize when they're not running properly, and sometimes you get a system with the software that's not right, and you got to relate to the vendor, the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Here's what it's doing. You know, during our 5 p.m. newscast, we're telling this camera to go over here, and it's not until the last second, and then we're late taking the shot. Yeah, whatever it may be. It still takes smart people to run this stuff. May not take as many of them. Well, okay, hey, we've been having fun talking. I love talking to you, Isaiah. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back from the break, Isaiah's going to reveal the secret to bringing all these young peoples into the SPE meetings. So it's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 617. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio. This show is brought to you in part by my friends over at Angry Audio. And this is a product we haven't talked about much. This is, let me scroll back up here, Kill Dead Air Dead. What? This is the fail-safe switching gadget. Now, it's got more uses than you may think, so stay tuned here. Of course, if your program feed dies, this is just a great way to switch to a backup program feed. And here's what the different controls do right here. There's a silence indicator. The failsafe gadget continually monitors the main signal and switches to the backup event in the event of silence. It has illuminated switches that you can yourself manually select main and backup. You don't have to wait for dead air. You can manually, you know, switch that. You can set the threshold. You can set the amount of time. But you can also set the behavior with some recovery switches. Now, what does that do? Well, here's an idea. Let me scroll down here a little bit. Oh, there's the back. You've got your analog audio inputs and audio outputs and some logic control there as well. But check this idea out here. I'm going to read this to you. This is a great idea. You can use the fail-safe gadget in reverse. So perhaps you have a source that you want to put on the air whenever it appears. Let's say you're going to do a live remote, but you're a one-person operation. Well, it's easy. Just feed your regular programming into the B input of this fail-safe device, and then feed your occasional source into the A input and put the recover switch in the A less than greater than B position. Now, whenever there's audio on your source, on you, that is your temporary source, it'll override the regular programming and set the timer for a short delay when the source goes silent again, and your regular programming will continue. So check, what a great idea to automatically be able to go on the air with an audio source. So hey, if you need a gadget that does that, this is your gadget. It's the fail-safe switching gadget from Angry Audio. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention something else from Angry Audio, the headphone disconnector. This will keep you, the engineer, from having to repair a quarter-inch or 3.5-millimeter headphone jacks, because if your talent gets up and walks away, no problem. There's a MagSafe-style connector right there. And look, it goes right back together, too. So they can walk away with the headphones around their head, around their neck, or whatever, and save you. You know what? Last time I was at my stations in Mississippi, I had to extract one of these from a headphone amp. How about that? Because I didn't have this. I will now. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio. Go to angryaudio.com and check them out. They have a whole lot of stuff that'll make your job easier. Our other sponsor here is Max Connect Wireless. Max Connect makes these, they don't make these 4G LTE modems. They make the SIM cards that go inside that connect you to a major carrier network, and you get to pick which one. A major carrier network, and gives you a static IP address and prioritized data. Let's hear from John Tokok about what this does for his radio station.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
Tokok from Radio 1. And now, check this out. Here's the website you want to go to. It is maxconnect.com. Yeah, I know it's spelled funny because everybody's got every website available on the internet. Maxconnect.com. And here's where you can read about, you can choose your carrier. And it tells about how the system works. You get a static IP address, no contracts. You can cancel anytime. They can provide a router, a modem, or just a SIM card. So if you've already got equipment that'll do this, that you want to use, like a 4G LTE modem, just get the SIM card. You can buy your own hardware or their hardware, or provide your own. You can bond multiple SIMs, and ports can be opened as well if you need that. External antennas are also available. And if you scroll down far enough, you'll see this video with me talking about Max Connect Wireless. Josh Bone figured this out and got these carriers to offer this service through him to the broadcast community. And I really appreciate this. I got to use one of these not long ago, just less than a month ago, to help keep a community station on the air when their internet service had failed. So it worked out really, really well. Max Connect Wireless. Go to maxconnect.com. And thanks a lot, Josh Bone and Max Connect Wireless. All right. The promised moment is here. Yes, we're going to put Isaiah Chavez on the spot. If I had a drum roll, I'd drum roll. Isaiah, you're bringing these young folks into the SBE meetings, and they seem to be sticking around a while and interested. So tell us about what you're doing.
Well, before that, by the way, that breakaway cable, I need that. I still need that because I'll rip it really fast, and I don't want to, just a little click, just like what you showed me. Love it. I'm marrying it.
I love it.
So anyway, what do I do to get them interested? Well, I tell them, I'm like, do you want to be like Kirk Karnak? And they're like, yeah, that was it.
Oh, no. No. Surely not.
So what we did was that I go and talk to a lot of people, and they get interested. They're like, oh, wow. So you could do this with your career and that with your career, and SBE could help you. Yeah. They're like, well, how much does it cost? And when I tell them the price, they're like, ooh, that's just too much for me. And I kept getting that same response of, I don't like that, or that's too much. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I got to get this fixed. So a few months ago, I was at my own SBE meeting, Chapter 39, and I said, hey, we have this little issue. Is there any way that we could make membership for the first year completely free, and we will pay the cost for it? And they're like, that sounds like a great idea. So we did that, and just boatloads of people just began coming in and learning and getting excited and getting involved with SPE. The people that's been there for a while, they're really excited because I'm bringing in people my generation. By the way, I'm 34, so I'm bringing in, you know, the people in the 30s, people in the 20s, and they want to know more about broadcast engineering. They want to know more about radio or television or what have you. And it's exciting to see people perk up because we need the next generation. And by providing them with a free membership, it really helps out. And not only that, for the second year, yes, they will have to pay. However, they get free certifications, whatever they like. So that could be up to $50, up to $165 paid for by the chapter themselves.
Okay, so this sounds like, let me get this, it sounds like a kind of a multi-pronged approach. First of all, you and maybe others, but you are out there talking to either students or young engineers at other facilities and so forth, and you're kind of talking up SBE, which we ought to all be doing anyway. It's free to do that, but you're younger than a lot of engineers, and you have recent, you know, college experience, and you know that world very, very well. Okay, so you're out there talking to people. That's good. That's prong number one. If people, engineers, young engineers, non-members don't know about SBE, then they are not going to come anyway. So you're informing. Second of all, you're offering, tell you what, our chapter cares about you joining SBE. We think it's worthwhile. You've got all these professionals who are engineers. They, through their dues and you know, our budget with our chapter, will pay for you to be a member for your first year. And do you pay for the member plus?
So yeah, I wish. I totally wish. But no, just the regular membership.
Regular membership.
And,
okay.
You know,
okay,
to get them in the meetings. And by the way, every meeting that we have, free food. Come on, well, you can't say no to free food.
Yep. So okay. So you pay their membership, but then I would imagine that since the chapter is financially invested in some of the people coming in, I mean, you know, we're paying for these people to so that they can be here. The chapter. And Chapter 39 has good programs. I mean, y'all brought me in, right? I mean, so you guys have good programs. So I would think that this kind of feeds upon itself. You encourage people to come in. You pay for them to come in so they'll come in and try it for a year. And then you put on better programs than maybe some chapters who aren't quite as incentivized to make a good showing.
And on top of that, what we do is that, like, we can do a job shadowing for a day so that they could do maybe a job shadowing in the radio station, a job shadowing at a TV station. Mm-hmm. They can get their feet wet and to see what they like more, or do they like it, or do they really want it, you know? And a lot of them are like, yeah, I want this, you know? And I like the enthusiasm because that's what we need more of.
Mm-hmm.
Is people getting excited, people running this job, or a different career, or maybe they're like, I want more for myself. I want to move up. So I like seeing that. And the program that I've initiated 3 months ago, it brought in 15 new people. And that's amazing because, you know, my chapter was decently sized, but now it's just boom. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of people, you know? And I'm just very grateful that the whole chapter, gave, you know, good faith of me to make this happen, and it's happening.
So your chapter had to meet and vote. Would we spend the money to bring people in? You might have to have a limit. Hey, once, you know, we'll pay for 20 people, which is going to be on the order of $1,000. We'll pay for 20 people to be in. And then you decided for the second year, hey guy, you want certifications? We'll pay for your certificate, your exams, right? Is that what you're paying?
Yes. For? Well, here, I could explain a little bit better. Mm-hmm. For the certifications, anyone in the chapter, if you've been there for longer for 1 year, can get those certifications for free.
Okay. Okay. Anybody in the chapter, not just new members. Okay.
I just took my CB&E. For free.
Ah, okay. Good. So
hopefully I passed. It was actually a good test. But yeah, anyone can. And it looks good on the chapter to see all these people certified and whatever they like.
Well, let's hope you passed. If you did, welcome to the CB&E Club.
Yes.
Glad you're
life
here.
Goals.
Isaiah Chavez, thanks again for being with us on This Week in Radio Tech. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot to you, our viewers and listeners to This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, patronize our sponsors, if you would, please. It means a lot to us. Like and share, if you would. Let other folks know about our show. Of course, you're welcome to contact the show and let us know if you have any ideas about who we should interview and what we should talk about on TWRT. And we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.